I worked with what I had at the time. The PC I had wasn't designed to handle streaming and gaming at the same time. As I received income from Twitch, anything I got from streaming, I could reinvest into the stream. And that's exactly what I did for probably my first 6 months. I am extremely, extremely, extremely fortunate to have the community that I have. We don't have a massive CCV, but within that community, we have some amazingly generous people that have allowed for this transition to going full time. If there's anything I could have done, I wish I would have started making YouTube videos and content as early as I possibly could have to start gaining that growth, gaining that extra exposure and driving viewers to my Twitch and to other platforms. Once I became more active on Twitter, once I started doing more stuff on YouTube, more recently on TikTok, I mean, we have a video now that's almost at 50,000 views. The more your name can get out there, the more opportunities are going to come. With any job where you're working from home, it's too easy to sort of slack off a little bit because you're at home, right? There's been multiple times now where I was having a horrible day, didn't really feel like going live, but I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna do it. And some of those days have been literally my best streams. Until you hit that go live button, you take that leap, you take the chance, nothing will happen until then. So it's worth the effort. At least give it a shot, give it a month, give it 3 months, and see what happens, and then evaluate whether it's something you want to pursue or not.
Smithy, Iron Smithy, Corey, it is so good to have you on the show. This is not actually the first time we tried to do this. Last time I kind of snuck in a little surprise regarding the Pipeline Scholarship, but it is so good to have you on. Thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And you did sneak that in last time, but it was a welcome surprise. And now we get to do it for real.
We do. And I've been fortunate to kind of see your journey over the last few years and be particularly kind of close attention to it. Obviously, you're a Pipeline Scholar, which was a really cool experience. You piloted the program with us. So not only did you, we able to support you more, but we're also able to learn a lot about the process itself and how we can actually improve it and do better for kind of future cohorts as well. So I appreciate that. I want to take the clock a little bit back though. One of the things we'd love to do on the podcast is, you know, wind it back to early on. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in a little town in Ontario called Pendleton, a little tiny town on a horse farm. We had like 57 horses growing up and did the professional rodeo circuit. And
did professional rodeo?
Yeah. So we did barrel racing and all the like Western Gymkhana games and stuff like that. My sister did more. She did the Western stuff as well, but she also did the like English stuff, jumping and lead and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, that's how my childhood grew up. 90% of my weekends and birthdays growing up were spent at a rodeo somewhere with, you know, my parents showing up to the school to pick me up with the horse trailer in tow and ready to go. But it was fun. It taught me a lot. Obviously had lots of chores growing up, taught me a lot of responsibility and caring for the animals and helping around the farm and stuff, but it shaped me into who I am today. So grateful for it. I actually miss it. And, you know, it's something we've been talking about with the wife and kids of, you know, maybe one of our future houses down the road, we'll get a little hobby farm, get some horses going again and sort of teach my kids how I grew up and stuff like that.
That's really cool and really interesting. My ignorance around rodeos and farm life is definitely very prominent. The only reference I have is there was some show on Netflix or HBO. It was really good though. And they were competing over land. Yellowstone. Yeah, Yellowstone. Did you ever watch that?
I haven't. I haven't watched Yellowstone. I know one that me and my wife like here that we've watched a lot is The Ranch. That one we've watched sort of beginning to end, but I'll have to look into Yellowstone for sure.
Phenomenal. Seriously, like I really, and my wife enjoyed it too, which traditionally, like, there's very few shows that both her and I like. Yep. Yellowstone was one of the ones that we both loved. I'm sure folks listening have heard of it. It's really cool, but that's the, my exposure to that. So you were doing that from what age, like from being a kid to when?
Oh, wow. As long as I could remember, really. So from a very young age, we started, and then it went pretty much all the way through. We still had horses into about my senior year, maybe the year before my senior year, I think, before we finally, had sold off our last two horses. But yeah, pretty much my entire home life. I think shortly after the horses were sold and the farm became more of a yard, essentially, and the barn turned into a garage, I think I only spent maybe one or two more years at the house, and then I was off at college and pursuing that side of things. So pretty, like I said, pretty much my whole upbringing until I moved out of the house, we had the farm and the horses and stuff.
It's something I've always admired. I had an uncle that was a farmer, and the work ethic and discipline that fosters, because you really have no choice, right? Like, the work needs to get done, and you're the only people there to do the work. And
yeah,
it's a whole operation behind that. What was the reason for getting out of the farm? Was it your parents were just done? Was it your parents that?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, my parents were getting a little bit older, right? I'm the youngest of three within our family, and they were getting on to the older side. Obviously, it's very physical when you're doing like Western riding and you're doing training and stuff like that. My dad would train horses from all over the world. Like, people would fly horses to him from overseas to train. And it's a very physical job. And I think just over time, it started to get to him a little bit more. So we started, you know, downsizing as we went on. And then we just basically kept our horses. And then as the horses were getting older, closer to like end of life and stuff like that, we just sort of started winding down from it. And then obviously my sister had moved out, I was on my way out, and my oldest sister was already out of the house like before we really got heavily into the whole Western stuff. So once the kids started moving out, it got too much for my parents to keep going, and I think that's how it all sort of came to rest.
Did they ever pitch you on come on, do the family business, we've been doing this for a while?
At that point he was transitioning into trucking, and like, he was starting his own business as trucking and stuff like that, so he didn't so much try to pass on the family farm to me, but he has definitely pitched the trying to take over the trucking business. So I don't know if I could drive up and down the road that many hours a day and stay
maybe,
sane.
Maybe
so.
Virtually. That might be more shitty now in today's world. So yeah. You went to college. What'd you go to college for?
So I went to college for music performance. I got a degree in music performance, and then I played with Sudbury Symphony Orchestra for a number of years. Traveled all over the place, mostly, funny enough, actually. So my high school journey of music, which led into college, obviously had me travel more to more unique places and everything than I did, once I actually had a professional gig playing. I competed in New York City. We competed at like a national level. We, traveled all over Canada and Ontario for music as well. And so I got the degree. That obviously is a little hard to pay the bills as a new musician. It's based on like seating and stuff like that, and it put me into a position where I would work for, you know, a couple months, and then they didn't need as many of my instruments, so I was out of work for X amount of months until they needed enough of my instrument again for me to get back in. So that's when the military came into play.
So you're out of college at this point.
Yeah, out of college, was playing with the symphony orchestra, and I needed obviously something more stable, because, you know, I wasn't moving back home with mom and dad, and I'm like, I need to stay out, I need something concrete, and my brother-in-law is a police officer, so I applied for police and the military at the same time, and the military came through first, so I jumped on it, and through a little bit of creativity on the recruiter's part, he led me down a different path than I was initially going for. But all in all, like, I'm so proud and honored, like, glad that I went the route that I did as opposed to what I was originally going for.
It's a very different route, you know, musician to the military. It's not like a linear career path at all.
No, definitely not.
So you went, and what did that entail? Just because I don't know, and I'm sure some of our listeners don't know, what does that entail when you say I sign up the military? What does that mean?
Yeah, so you go into a recruitment center, and they have obviously military members that are there that give you information. They have all kinds of videos and pamphlets and all that kind of stuff. And you go in, and this is where the recruiter did a very good job, because when I went in to apply, we were sort of at the peak of like 9/11. All the stuff in Afghanistan was going down and stuff like that. So because I had a music background and I knew there was a military band, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to sign up to be a military musician, because at least I'll have a steady gig then. And when I did that, the recruiter is like, oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, but the band's an extracurricular thing. So sign up for one of these combat arm trades and then just tell your boss when you get there
that
you want to join the band.
That's a bit of a bait and switch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, and me being ignorant, because nobody in my family had been part of the military service, I didn't know any better. So I'm like, all right. I'm like, well, tanks look cool. So, you know, let's jump into one of those. And, you know, 12 months down the road, I was in Afghanistan and my bosses all got a really good laugh when I said, hey, so I want to join the band. And they're like, that's great, but you're in the wrong trade. So, from the day that I signed up to my first day in Afghanistan was exactly 1 year. So I signed up, did my basic training, went off to trade school, got to my regiment, did a little bit of training there, basically right into workup training for Afghanistan. And then I was overseas a year later.
So is that a conventional path, or was it just because it was such a heated, you know, era in the world that it was accelerated?
Yeah, I definitely think it was because I still know soldiers to date that were in before me, that were in after me, that joined and still have never done a tour before. So I think it came down to, for one, my performance within my courses in the military and everything like that. Like generally, I'd always score like in the top, you know, I'd say 5% of like all my courses. I got fast tracked into like a gunner course where I finished off as the top candidate for that course. So I think because of like my performance within the forces and when I came in, where I was positioned, I think everything just lined up perfectly to allow me to go over and serve overseas in Afghanistan. So,
wow. So I'm sure there's a whole, you know, thing we can go down on that side. But I want to be cognizant. There's a lot of streamers listening that would love Absolutely. To hear about how you got to there. So how long were you in the military for?
So I was in the military for 12 and a half years, I guess you could say, by the time I sort of, my end date happened, wasn't quite 13 years. So yeah.
And why the next chapter?
Kids came into the picture. My wife was also in the forces. And within our first year of our son being born, we were both gone for 6 months of that year, where my son was being raised by daycares and godparents and whatever we could do at the time, because they were always deploying us at the same time together. And we're like, listen, you know, we had kids, now we're not even raising our own kids for half the year generally, because we're always gone at the same time. So my contract was coming up for renewal. My next one I would have had to sign would have been for 25 years. And I'm like, well, if there's any chance for me to step back, now's the time, or we're like committing. So we had a long discussion. We both decided to pull ourselves out of the forces and take our next chapter. And that's what started to lead to my journey into content creation.
So you mentioned you had a kid. Yeah. Have you got one kid? Many kids?
I have two. I got a daughter and a son. My son's turning 7. And my daughter's turning 4 this year. So
how long ago was that then decision to leave the military and find out what's next?
So we would have left, it would have been 2 years ago that we actually retired. So I had to wait for my contract to end. My wife left a little bit earlier. She moved down here, and then I stayed on base for about 6 months in between there, where we were doing some shuttling back and forth and making it work as we transitioned, living with a friend and stuff like that. But yeah, it's been 2 years since I retired now.
And you were thinking about what's next.
Yep.
What were the contenders?
So when I retired from the forces, I actually left and I went into selling life insurance. There was a big reason for this, because in the forces, obviously, having gone to Afghanistan, having had many friends that have gone to Afghanistan, I saw a lot of families like left in destitution. You know, the husband goes away, doesn't come back, and then the family's left, you know, in either distraught for money or just in some bad, bad ways due to like simple mistakes, like your beneficiaries not being in order. A good friend of mine, actually, the husband went overseas, didn't come back. He didn't update his beneficiaries, and all of his money actually went to an ex-girlfriend from like years prior to that meeting. And because it's a legal binding contract, the wife was still fighting it till the day that I retired, trying to get that money from the ex-girlfriend. And because of that, it was like, you know what, I want to do this. I want to help people. I want to be in that position where I can make people aware from what I've learned over my time. And did that and was very successful with it. But over time, I was always gone. Like, I was gone from the house more than almost in the military because I was constantly on the road. All the appointments were in people's houses. It was always at night. So, like, I never went to bed with my family and never saw them go to bed. Wasn't really helping my wife out a whole lot. And when I wasn't on the road or at work, I was answering emails, booking appointments, always on my phone, always away. And that wasn't what we left the military for. The whole point was to be more present in our children's lives. And then that's what led into my my switch to content creation.
So had you been aware of content creation at this point, or were you viewing it when you were away in overseas? Or, like, how did you come into the content creation world?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it first would have become really prevalent. Like, I've always been a gamer since I was a kid. I used to have LAN parties with my sister and her friends all, like, every weekend, and gaming was always a big part of my life, right? So when streaming and content creation came around, I think PewDiePie was one of the first live streams I ever watched, because I kept hearing all this news about this guy that was, like, blowing up, and I was like, what is this? And still to this day, remember going back and watching that and being like, okay, this is interesting, right? Like, PewDiePie is a very unique character, and it was just very interesting. And then I think it wasn't until I was overseas and one of my buddies actually showed me a live stream. Actually, no, it was a YouTube video of Stone's YOLO series. That was the first, like, I'm like, okay, wait a minute. I'm like, this is a little bit different than what I've seen in the past. And that, I think Stone was honestly one of my first exposures to, like, live streaming and content creation, where they were doing more, you know, video game based content as opposed to just doing crazy things and creating content like that, right? So a bunch of my buddies, obviously we're overseas in Afghanistan, we get a little bit of internet time here and there. Started watching a lot of Stone stuff, got familiar with Stone. Once I got back from overseas, was able to catch some live streams, become a little bit more involved, like, in his community, like, through that method. And then started watching more and more of other games I was playing. World of Warcraft specifically, I was very interested in. I played a lot of World of Warcraft at the time, so started watching people like Asmongold and Swifty and Tally and all those content creators on that side of things. And then it just sort of snowballed from there, and it became this new addiction of mine, watching YouTube videos and Twitch streams. And it was something I always wanted to try, but I was never either in a position to do it because of, like, internet restrictions, or just was too afraid to do it. And yeah, I didn't gain that bravery until I had met an individual by the name of Christian Bishop, who we met randomly through an exclusive creator-only access that we got to a game called Last Oasis. Started meeting, or I met him, we ended up in the same guild together, started chit-chatting, came to find out that he was the CFO of Method Gaming, which had no idea at the time. Obviously was very familiar with Method Gaming through World of Warcraft and everything like that, and then he actually introduced me to you, got me into Pipeline, and the rest is sort of what we're here to talk about.
One part that caught me up, like, I was like, you did, was it two tours or three tours? Two tours.
I did two tours to Afghanistan, yeah.
Two tours to Afghanistan, and you were afraid to go live or create content.
It's a different story, right? Like, you train, you prepare, you're confident to go overseas, right? You trust in your training, and they push you and, like, teach you sort of all the best ways to, like, handle yourself, that when you go over there, you're confident. Like, you know what you're doing, you know what you're going to do under that experience, because the training we go through is very rigorous, for one. But they also make it very realistic in a lot of ways too. And I did a bunch of advanced courses. I sort of always have been somebody who liked to consume as much knowledge and be as prepared as I could for any situation. And that's why, sort of segueing again, why Pipeline was so intriguing to me, because that's exactly what it was. It was a source of all this knowledge and everything like that. And I looked at the military the same way. Every chance I had, I would take whatever courses I could, make sure that I was always the most prepared to do my job at the highest efficiency possible. So,
well, it's badass, but I still can't believe that you were too scared to go live after doing two tours to Afghanistan. I think it's worth listening for all of our listeners out there that are like, oh, I want to start, but I've just not got around to it yet. This is a guy to 2 years of cast that still was, like, feeling that same way. I think it's just, it's an interesting review. So Yeah, I remember that. You know, Christian, I've known Christian for a bunch of years, and he introed us. And you were like, yeah, I want to check this out. And you kind of came at a pipeline. That was the beginning of your journey. So I think you're saying the thing for you, because I never had this when I first started out.
Yeah.
I wish I did. Same with Stone. We built, that's why we built Pipeline. We wish we had this when we first started out. So it was just a central hub for information for you. You know, you like to kind of immerse yourself in a topic or a subject, and this was your on-ramp. Did it give you the confidence? Was it just the school? Like, what was it that made you want to dive into Pipeline?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll be completely honest with you here. I don't know if this is going to end up biting me in the rear end here or not, but my intention coming into it, it was one of those things to me that sounded great. Obviously, it was highly recommended from somebody who I had come to trust and everything like that. But at the same time, it's one of those things that on paper, it sounds too good to be true, right? So my intent was I'm going to come in for a month. I'm going to see what it's all about, gather as much information as I can, and probably part ways. That was my original idea that I had when I was coming on board. But within my first 2 weeks, I quickly realized this is not something that I can gather the information in only a month and part ways. Like, there was so much to Pipeline. The community reeled me in. The amount of support that was provided by the staff right out the gate, never having heard of me, never having known who I am or my story or anything like that. Like, it gave me a true feeling like you actually wanted to see us succeed, which I know Pipeline does. Like, and it's something so rare, in my opinion, in this industry, that people actually want to help you succeed. And it's definitely what has kept me here this entire time and will keep me here for many years to come, because I know now that this organization is truly next level. It is going to continue to bring so much value to so many up and coming streamers, and I can't wait to see where it's going to continue to go and to continue to be a part of that and help other upcoming streamers the same way that you guys help me.
Cool. Well, I appreciate that, man, but I want to talk about your journey.
Yes.
I mean, we're obviously knee deep in this side, but I want to come back to that starting aspect. So you first went live.
Yep.
What was that like? And what equipment did you have when you first, like, scary. What gear did you have?
Okay. Yeah. So, for one, I was up in my attic. I did not have my studio that I have now. I was up in my attic, slanted ceilings, camera angles were all kinds of off. I was using a crappy webcam that I got from like Walmart. I had a Turtle Beach headset where like the ear foam was like falling apart and deteriorating, headset mic, and I had a single PC with two monitors, and that's what I had. I had a rickety old desk that I got from like a garage sale. Nothing special, nothing fancy, but it was enough to at least get me started, get me out in front of people, get me used to start talking to the camera, and start interacting with chat. And for the first multiple streams, I mean, the only people in chat were like my sister, my parents, friends, maybe a multiple device that I have here to like monitor the stream and count as an extra viewer just to help us out at the very beginning and get us past that sort of like five viewer wall that a lot of people get stuck at. And then over time, as we kept going, more and more people started coming in. Chat was actually starting to take off. It wasn't as much of me just talking to myself to the camera, monologuing what I'm doing, but actually had people to talk to. And it just sort of, as more and more people were coming in, I got more and more confident, like, okay, people are coming in and they're staying and they're coming back for future streams, so I must be doing something right. So it made me feel more and more confident. And when I went back and did sort of like our 1 year journey and I look back at those first streams, it's really amazing to see how far we've come from back then to where we are now in only 1 year's time. It's really mind blowing to see.
Yeah, no, it is wild how much you've grown in the last few years. When you go back to that, you're talking about the hardware. A lot of people I find in the beginning are, one, they either spend too much on hardware right away, or they are too intimidated by the hardware that they just can't, like the idea of figuring out a mic, it's you know, it's really overwhelming.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that? Because you weren't necessarily as tech savvy, if I remember, when you were first starting out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I worked with what I had at the time. And I knew it wasn't at the level we needed it to be at. The PC I had wasn't designed to handle, you know, streaming and gaming at the same time. So we had to make some adjustments there. And it was, Yeah, the more I went on, the more I did research, obviously, the more I looked into, okay, what are the first upgrades that I should get, which pretty much everybody led to audio. Worry about your audio first, and then, you know, your camera could come after if you want to. So and then as I received income, excuse me, from Twitch, because at the time when I started my streaming journey, I was also working construction. So all my bills were covered by the construction side. So anything I got from streaming, I could reinvest into the stream. And that's exactly what I did for probably my first 6 months, I want to say. I would say at least 6 months. Everything I got from Twitch, I just reinvested. So I think the first thing I picked up was a... What would have been the first thing? I think the first thing I got was a new microphone and the Go XLR. This was something, obviously, I had to save up for multiple months. My first month, obviously, didn't get me that kind of income to be able to do that. But we got a Rode Podcast XLR mic into the Go XLR. That was my first like big upgrade. I think my second one after that was a third monitor, because I quickly found out I needed a monitor to sort of monitor the stream and the chat, and then one for like Discord, and then one for the gameplay. Just made it easier for me because it was too easy for me to get distracted, or I was missing things in chat, having it sort of at a smaller window broken up with a bunch of other things. So we went with that, and then... We went to, I think at that point, that's when I went to my camera and got the Sony A5100, and then slowly just added more and more as time went on, kept upgrading stuff until the point where we're at today.
I think it's a good takeaway for those listening is that, you know, you started out where you started out, you had what you had, and you kind of made that work and got comfortable with the idea of being live and what that entailed, and then, you know, progressively invested what you made from the stream back into it. And I think that's the healthiest way to do it. Too many times do I see people drop like $3,000, $5,000, whatever it is, on upgrading their entire setup. They go live for like a month and they're like, oh, I just don't enjoy this hard, or like, you know, and then they end up falling out and they're just going to put this massive expense out. So I highly recommend the way you did it.
Yeah.
You mentioned your construction job. So you're working a full-time job.
Yep.
And you're streaming on the site. How often were you actually making in those beginning day, like early days, making content each week?
Yeah, so I was doing, I sort of dove right into it, and this goes, like, so much credit of this goes to my wife, right? Because once we dove into this, once we started seeing some early success in streaming.
What is early success, just to quantify that? Like, what made you feel like you were starting to see success?
Seeing constant followers coming in, new followers pretty much every stream. We were constantly seeing some really good growth. We were getting, we were having constant chat going on where it was active and it wasn't just me talking to myself. Starting to see some subscribers roll in. We hit affiliate really, really early, which is obviously a very satisfying thing to see early on, where you could actually start receiving some of that monetization. And then just seeing how our community was taking form and how generous they were and everything like that. That's when I sort of sat down with my wife, and obviously through what I had learned from the playbook about structuring schedules, and so my community knew exactly when I would be live. We sat down, and I was working at the time, to answer your original question now with a little bit more information there. I was working 40 hours a week, 10-hour shifts, 4 days a week, working 40 hours a week. And then I would stream about 30 to 35 hours a week.
That is intense.
Within, I would say, my first month and a half of streaming, we committed to that many hours. And it led us to where we are today.
And you had two kids.
Yeah.
How important for those listening, would you say that conversation was with your wife?
I don't think there's any other way that you could go about it and stay in a healthy relationship, right? Like, I think that communication is so key to have with your significant other, because if they're not happy, it's going to show in your content creation as well. Because if you just had a fight 10 minutes before because you're going live again, and then you're going to go live, for me anyways, that would definitely show through in my stream, right? So I have to, like, and it's something we agreed on, you know, when we first started dating, essentially, is that we would always communicate with each other and be upfront with each other, and wouldn't keep anything from them, and make sure they were always at each other. We were always in the know of what our plans and what we wanted to do. We've always supported each other no matter which way, which career path we went down, as long as the person's happy in what they're doing, essentially. And obviously my wife knew this was making me very happy, that she wanted to see it succeed and wanted to get more involved in it, even though she is the biggest probably anti-gamer that I know. She doesn't, you know, I've started getting her to come over a little bit more, but I mean, she rarely ever played anything other than like Mario growing up. Was not a big gamer, had no idea what Twitch was or anything before we started dating. And now, you know, she's in my chats, she's promoting, you know, events and giveaways, and she's just come so far, and it's truly amazing to see. And I think, you know, the more you communicate with them and get them involved, I think the better just overall it is to make this like an actual lasting career.
When you're talking about making it a career, at what point was it, you know, you had your construction job, and at what point were you able to question whether or not this was something you could seriously do, you know, for a living?
Yeah. So, I mean,
how far in was that?
Yeah. So about, I want to say it was within our second or third month of streaming, probably about our second month, because we were still playing Last Oasis. We had just fought this this large guild within the game, and a bunch of them had found my stream, and they came in to talk a bunch of crap, obviously, right? Because, you know, we just fought them, we killed a bunch of them, and then after we had killed a bunch of them and taken a bunch of their supplies and their weapons and all that kind of stuff, we started pulling back because we knew that their alliance and that their guys were going to start to rally and come back, and we wanted to get away with everything, so we started to leave. So they came in talking all kinds of garbage, and I've always been family friendly. That's something I've done from the beginning, so I don't put up with any of that. And what I'll do to counter it is I'll just kill them with kindness, essentially, or my mods will make sure that they leave. But they came in, and we always give everybody a chance, and they came in talking all kinds of crap. I'm like, oh, thank you so much for coming in. You know, I appreciate you. Thanks for the view. Thanks for the like, this and that. And like a couple of them start saying like, wait a minute, like, you're not a jerk. And I'm like, no, I'd like to think I'm not a jerk. And they're like, you're actually pretty cool. Like, what are you doing with these guys then? And I was like, well, it brought you guys to me. So I was like, it seems like a pretty smart choice. And they're like, all right, I like you. And then, you know, a few donations started coming in, this and that. They started bringing all their guild in. Next thing I know, I had like 300 viewers 2 months into streaming because this clan was like over 1,000 members strong. Dropping all kinds of follows, all kinds of generosity and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know what? They had nothing but kind words and positivity and stuff like that to say. And I'm like, if I could do that with somebody that came in there to trash talk me and stream snipe me, then who knows what the options are moving forward here. So that's when I definitely started looking at more, instead of this just being a hobby, like, how can we transition this into a career? Started diving more into the playbook on that side of things. You know, how can we look to diversify income, and how can I make this more stable where I can still raise my family on it and make a career out of this at the same time?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, you have that additional responsibility, right?
Yeah.
There's a family to provide for, and that's an extra level of kind of thought that has to go into making that transition. At what point were you able to go, okay, I'm going to jack in the construction job?
Well, they sort of lended a hand in that. So back in, when would that have been? Back in November, end of October, early November of 2020, our project had finished here that I was working on. We were building a hospital just down the road from here, and the project came to an end. The hospital was finished, and I went onto the waiting list for like a new job,
about a year and a half into your streaming journey, right?
So no, not even. This would have been about 10 months into my streaming journey.
10 months, okay.
Yeah, about 10 months into my streaming journey, maybe even a little less than that. And that came in, so I'm like, okay, well, I'm home anyways. I'm on the waiting list. I'm like, we can keep focusing on content. And then shortly after, the first iteration of the scholarship got announced, which we applied for, obviously. And then everything, I was still on the list when the winners were announced, and I'm like, all right, so here's another conversation that I have to have with my wife. I was like, if they call and I'm on this scholarship, I'm like, as long as you're good with it, I'm not taking another job until the scholarship's over, because I want to give this my best effort. We have 3 months of, you know, all these leaders of the industry that are going to be helping us and having meetings, and let's see what like full-time streaming looks like for the 3 months. And she's like, all right. She's like, yeah, let's do it. So yeah, we did that, and then announced going to full-time last month.
That is crazy. And it's so recent, I think, which is incredible. But also so fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the transition, for a lot of people, it takes years to make that leap.
Yeah.
And it's really happened very quickly for you. When you think about that leap, at what point in your CCV roughly were you at? Because I think a lot of other content creators can relate to I need to hit these certain milestones. And I think one of the things that's very unique about you is how's your community relative to how well you actually, your community supports you, I think is really interesting.
Yeah. So
you can touch on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I am extremely, extremely, extremely fortunate. Like, I can't stress this enough to have the community that I have. We don't have a massive CCV. So I think about even to right now, we average about a 45 to 50 CCV is sort of what we're averaging right now. But within that community, we have some amazingly generous people that have allowed for this transition to going full time, right? Within that, I've also made some amazing contacts with partnered streamers, Sea of Thieves streamers that are partnered, who have now recently added us to an auto host list. So they host us, which is obviously now increasing my CCV from where we were sort of sitting ourselves, getting us a little more exposure. But yeah, so to not dive too far off on that subject, but my CCV right now is about 45 to 50 CCV, but with some fluctuations in there that come and go.
Yeah, and I think people traditionally how could I translate that? Because maybe someone's listening and they're at 5 or 15 CCV and they're thinking, well, wow, Smithy was able to make it go full time at, 45, 50. I think it really goes down to your connection with your community and how I think your life experience obviously helps a lot because you're able just to connect on kind of different levels with a lot of your community. But I think it just goes to show how positive you don't need to have thousands of viewers to make a living out of this. It's not necessarily about being the next ninja, and not to say that's never not possible. It's just not about being that. It's about, can I carve out a community around doing what I love and I enjoy in a kind of a group of like-minded people? And I think you're a testament to being able to do that. And you're still at the very beginning of your journey, but it's really cool to witness that. I think it speaks volumes for everyone listening that it may not be that far away at the same time.
Yeah. And I think obviously it's going to fluctuate with everybody's life situation and where they're at. Obviously I'm a little older. When I retired from the forces, we had a little bit of a pension that I was able to pay off a good portion of my debt. Cars are paid off and stuff like that. So our financial situation allows for us to still be very comfortable on a lower budget than some other families and some other people. Right. So I think that all of it just sort of lined up perfectly for me to be able to be okay, based on our situation right now, we can do this and we can still live very comfortably. Where that might not be the same situation for somebody else who still has, let's say school loans and, just bought their first car and are moving into their first house. And there's a lot of factors that come into play, but it is definitely possible. And it's possible to live very comfortably, even with a lower CCV than, Ninja and Stone and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. When you think about the last year and a half in terms of how fast your journey's evolved, what's some of the things that you wish you could have went back and told yourself right at the beginning when you were doing those first few live streams in that first month? What's something you wish you could have told yourself back then?
Oh, that's a good question. Something I wish I could have told myself. I guess just to not be as afraid to dive into offline content. I think that's something that I held off on for a very long time that I wish I would have started earlier, especially doing YouTube videos and everything like that. The amount of time it takes to get into that YouTube algorithm to start gaining some significant growth on YouTube takes time, even for established creators. I've heard a few stories now of people who have a million subscribers and that rejig some of their content, and that takes a year for them to see it start boosting up again and start growing again. And I definitely wish, if there's anything I could have done, I wish I would have started making YouTube videos and content as early as I possibly could have. to start gaining that growth, gaining that extra exposure and driving viewers to like my Twitch and to other platforms as well.
What made you dive into it? Why, like, you waited a while, but then, like, what made you kind of go over the edge?
Watching and researching videos. I think Harris Heller definitely played a part into that, because he's always promoting sort of, you know, diversifying your income and how to drive viewers to Twitch, because obviously Twitch for smaller streamers doesn't do a whole lot to, like, gain that extra to drive people to your lives. So the more places you can be, have content, and to be cross-promoting your streams and stuff like that is going to help increase your growth. And once I started doing that, once I became more active on Twitter, once I started doing more stuff on YouTube, more recently on TikTok, I mean, we have a video now that's almost at 50,000 views. The more your name can get out there, the more opportunities are going to come. And even though I only have a 45 to 50 CCV right now, recently I've had, like, Sea of Thieves partners, Twitch partners reaching out to me, DMing me on Twitter. I just did my first invite-only Sea of Thieves charity tournament, I guess you could say, against Sea of Thieves legends and live streamers and everything like that. Like, some people that are immortalized within the game that have their name on a piece in the game because they're so relevant in that community. Just because they keep seeing my name pop up. They see it on Twitter, they see it on YouTube, they see it on TikTok. And then next thing you know, I got to sail with one of these players, like, on my team, and then we got invited to this exclusive event. And I think that speaks volumes. You know, the more that your name is out there, the more platforms you're in, like, you're part of, and that you're able to provide valuable content and not just be, you know, throwing out emojis in that, but actually providing, like, feedback to, like, other people's posts and providing value to them as well is going to speak volumes for you and drive more and more people to you. So it just got to the point where I'm like, okay, this is the next step I need to take to get, you know, to boost my CCV even further. And that probably hit, probably around 5 to 6 months in before I actually jumped on board and really started being active on socials and YouTube and everything.
You've obviously had a solid work ethic from the upbringing on the farm to being in the military. Like, you just have to, there's no option. When you've kind of brought that to content creation, how has your background and discipline, your mindset around that impacted your content and your approach to content creation?
Yeah, I think it does speak volumes, because it's too easy with any job where you're working from home, it's too easy to be lazy and to sort of slack off a little bit because you're at home, right? So it's like, I don't really feel like going live today. I'll just make a post in Discord or something and I won't go live. It's very, very easy to do that. Even, you know, whether you're feeling down or whatever the reasoning may be, being able to have that discipline where I'm like, you know what? I don't really feel it today, but I'm still going to bring 110%. I'm going to go live. And some of those days, there's been multiple times now where I was having a horrible day, didn't really feel like going live, but I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to rally. I'm going to do it anyways. And some of those days have been literally my best streams on a day that I never would have thought anything would have happened. So having that persistence, having that ability to sort of rally yourself and be like, no, even if I don't feel like it, I'm going to go live today. I'm going to give it my best effort. I'm still going to bring all the energy that I can. And go through with it instead of canceling, you'd be surprised how often those days come to be some of your best.
That's great. Yeah. You just never know who's watching as well. Like, whether that's, you know, a tweet that you sent out or a stream or a video that you posted, creating more opportunities and just getting yourself out there. And, I really admire your work ethic. I think especially, when you were juggling the job plus, you know, trying to be a good husband, trying to be a dad, and then you're really grinding on the content side, really impressive that you're able to keep it going. And I know it's not always easy. I know there's days that you're just like, I don't feel great, I don't want to do this. But it's really impressive how you can push through that. And I'm so stoked for you. I think it really is just the beginning of your journey. It is a long, windy road that goes up and down and all sorts of things, but it's truly the beginning of your journey. And it's been an honor to be a part of that in the way in which we have as well. So Smithy, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. Is there anything you'd like to say for the person that's out there thinking of getting started? What is one thing that they should, you know, take away from this podcast and like just go do.
Yeah, so I'll sort of give the same piece of advice that Christian gave me, and is just hit that go live button. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what can come of this until you actually hit that go live button. You can hem and haw about it as much as you want, but until you hit that go live button, you take that leap, you take the chance, nothing will happen until then. So it's worth the effort. At least give it a shot. Give it a month. Give it 3 months. And see what happens, and then evaluate whether it's something you want to pursue or not. But nothing can happen until you hit that go live button the first time.
100% true. Smithy, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It has been a pleasure, and thank you.